And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello to all you radios and podcast listeners out there. It's your favorite former Beatle Paul, hoping that you are all simply having a wonderful Christmas time. You know, we could all use ourselves a bit more cheer and good spirit this year, you know. And with all the bloody pandemic stuff, you know, the bad news, I'm telling you. Those people in Asia need to stop eating pangolins and bats and whatnot. It's so medieval, really, you know. And we should all be vegetarians. Let's not forget that. It would make the world a better place. Anyway, during these really tough economic times, the local restaurants and pubs need your support and business like never before, you know. Like the good folks over at Atlanta Pizza and Euro and Konya's, where I go every time I'm in town, man. It happens to be my favorite spot to visit whenever I'm in town and I'm in the mood for
raise a glass and don't let it down.
You know, Mike and his staff, you know, wanted me to thank you for all your continued support and have a very merry and wonderful Christmas time.
Hello, everybody, and Merry Christmas. Today is Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020, and this is a classic episode of Radio Labyrinth from a couple of years ago. Jeff Leboff, Ira Malkin, and myself, we interviewed Johnny Brennan, better known as one half of the Jerky Boys, now the both halves of the Jerky Boys. The Jerky Boys released a new album. He released a new album a couple of weeks ago, and he did a press tour. We weren't able to get him, but we had such a great time chatting with him when he hooked up with us in, I guess it was 2017, 2018. I don't know. Anyway, okay, so I double-checked. It's episode 97 from September of 2017. So without further ado, here you go. Hope everybody has a happy and merry Christmas and enjoy our interview with Johnny Brennan if you didn't hear it. And if you did hear it, enjoy it again. I listen to the same things over and over again because I'm a dork.
Hello, Johnny?
Yes.
There hey. He is. There's there Mr. Brennan. Is. Hi, sir.
How you doing?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm here.
Hey. Hello. What? Yes?
Hello. Hi, ma'am.
Barbara?
Barbara?
Who was Barbara?
Do, honey, baby.
Got a little job for you on the side.
All right.
Yeah, that's another cut. That's another
I know.
One.
I know. I'm mixing. I'm
yeah,
mixing.
We mix and match here. Hey, our guest tonight is an actor, writer, and voiceover artist. He co-wrote and starred in a 1995 cult classic film that I went by myself to see in the theater. He can be heard. He can be heard on Fox's Family Guy. He's also a hilarious improvisational comedian and prank caller, responsible for billions of laughs worldwide. He's been called the king of pranks, and he is the Jerky Boy. Let's give it up for Johnny Brennan, guys.
Man.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
We're very happy
thank
to have you,
guys. You.
You're one of our, all three of us, you're one of our heroes, man, going back to the early 1990s.
Oh, yeah, all of us. And we're all from the tri-state area, so.
Right.
Yeah, man, I was born and raised in Manhattan, you know, I'm pretty much all over the place, out to Queens, a little bit upstate New York, so I'm pretty much all over the place.
Middletown.
A lot of my... Yeah, Middletown. See, a lot of my history worked its way into a lot of my, you know, early days with the calls and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm Jersey. These guys are Pennsylvania.
And upstate New York.
Yeah, upstate New York. Well,
oh,
the boring
sorry.
Part of New York. Not the good part of New York.
Whereabouts upstate?
You ever heard of Mansfield or Elmira, New York?
Yes.
Elmira Corning area, that's kind of where we grew up.
Yeah, we race cars out that way.
Yeah.
Do you?
No, he doesn't.
Well, he could.
Watkins Glen is right near there.
Speeding up and down all over the place.
I mean, there was a point where he needed an auto mechanic, as you might remember.
Like 5 or 6 years ago, I was in Binghamton, New York, visiting a buddy, and his neighbor had a race car he was working on. So I took a picture of it and tweeted it to Johnny, and I used the line, and you retweeted it, and I was very excited about that.
18 years.
That's right. That's right,
tough guy. Let me tell you something. Up in Binghamton,
yeah.
We used to go to Binghamton. There was a great speedway there called Northgate Speedway. And it was indoor, outdoor, and it was a fun speedway. We can go and bring your friends, and we went the whole day up there. And man, they had these little sprint cars. They were the most fun things to drive, because what they would do is they put graphite down on the track.
Yeah.
So you had to handle it. You had to wheel that son of a bitch all night and all day, man. And we had so much fun at that place.
Well, that's cool that you're a racer, man. You got to come down to Road Atlanta sometime, man. Great track.
Oh yeah, my brother actually drove for the Richard Petty Racing School for years.
Get out of here. That's cool. Richard Petty.
Yeah, so we got him hooked up with that. He drove there for years, and he's one of the guys that, you know, you get in the car with him, and he kind of makes you crap your pants and all that jazz, you know?
So that's how you knew, I mean, was that your inspiration, your interest in racing for that you know, infamous call from the first CD?
Well, actually, I just incorporated that into my work, you know, as Frank Rizzo, because the racing was in my life way before, you know. You know, I was hitting the racetracks literally when I was a little boy. You know, 1964, 65 is my first trip to the racetrack up here in Middletown, New York. So, I mean, racing's always been part of my life. So, I mean, I incorporate a lot of the stuff that I've done in my life or, you know, in my younger life. I incorporate a lot of that, say, like paintwork, you know.
Paintwork.
You got nothing. You know.
What about taping?
Yeah. What about taping?
Nothing.
And you could pretty much take apart any one of my skits, and you'll find something. Like, for example, the one with the clam chowder, you know, with the scaffold, and I got the scaffold out there. And
roofing? Roofing. Roof work.
No, I'm not like... So your wife was out there with the hot mops, pretending like she knew what she was fucking doing?
Yeah, she's out there poking around like she knows what the fuck she's doing. I threw her right off the fucking roof, down onto the fucking car, bang, right on her fucking head.
Fired her down in the yard.
Here's how prevalent the Jerky Boys and Johnny are still in society today. Johnny, I work in radio, and I work part-time at a barbershop, you know, just for some scratch. I sweep up hair and whatnot, and I carve people's heads.
That would be a good call sometime.
But I was washing this dude's hair, and he was talking about something, and I inadvertently used a line from one of the CDs,
yeah.
And he knew right away, I think it was the mining call, you know, the Japanese guy.
Yeah.
And this guy owns a tattoo shop, and he said all they do all day long, at least once or twice a week, is put on the Jerky Boys.
Sure.
Still, in 2017, so that's pretty freaking awesome.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm sure you get that all the time from people.
It's amazing. And let me tell you something. It's the beautiful thing is to know that you created something that after all of these decades, let me tell you, it's stronger now than I've ever seen it before because of social media. Now, the only difference is that you don't get paid for it. You know, back in the day, you know, you put out records and, you know, they sell. I sold millions and millions and millions of records. And but you know who makes the money? I don't got to tell you that the record companies, they
sure.
Make you 7 ways to Sunday. But but now. It's like it's bigger now than it ever was, thanks to social media. So it's like a double-edged sword. It's like it's all good in a way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know it's mostly Spotify and YouTube now, and nobody's making anything off of that stuff.
No. And you could see. I mean, I remember the day I used to go to record stores, right? And I put my right hand to God. There was 10,000-15,000 people out the door. There were lines of people. They'd come in and buy the record, and then they could get a chance. They'd all shake my hand.
Yeah.
I'd sign whatever they want me to sign on the records. And those were fun days, man. And I actually have this on film where the line goes out the door and around the block, and it's thousands and thousands of people. Now you don't even have record stores anymore.
Right. Yeah, where are you going to go?
iTunes.
Right.
Hey, speaking of that, is there, Jeff wanted to know, I'm just going to ask your question, Jeff, is there an official place to buy Jerky Boys albums when we just go to thejerkyboys.com to get them?
Yes, it's more of a nostalgic deal now. You know, people, they don't need to play CDs anymore. And I do a lot of these Comic-Cons where I take the stuff because it's nostalgic. They like to have it put on their shelf or something like that.
Right.
So it's actually Jerky Boys 1 or Jerky Boys 2, you know, any of the CDs really, but pretty much the first two as a nostalgic deal. And, you know, what I do, and they're actual CDs. They will play. I autograph them for people and that sort of thing. People love that. And the same thing with the movies. And I got a brand new line of T-shirts, mugs, hats, you name it. And I can't believe the response it's getting. It's amazing. And it is. It's all at thejerkyboys.com. So you remember the word the, so it's thejerkyboys.com. And I think people are really going to love this stuff.
Here's something else you can get. You can go there and get Jerky Gourmet Foods. They have, and the one that really piques my interest the most is Frank's Pickle Barrel Ash. You get, what are they, bread and butter, right. Zesty bread and butter pickles.
Right. And, you know, the funny thing is the food is actually Pomodori Foods out of Pittsburgh. And the food's all gourmet. It's no preservatives. It's all top shelf, top notch stuff. And it just, we just thought, how awesome would it be to have, you know, Frank Rizzo has his own pickles, his own line of pickles. So yeah. it all, and Sal Rosenberg, he's got tearing the ass out of me. You know, so and I have to say, the products are absolutely amazing. So that, you know, it's really good stuff. But that's the food, and, you know, people can go to jerkyboys.com, and, you know, there's a lot, anything, there's so much stuff to choose from. I even do personal, like, greetings for the fans, like birthdays and bar mitzvahs. I've done weddings, you name it, I do it.
And people can pick what character they want you to do it in?
Yes, they pick the character, like, you know, I do birthdays, let's say, that, like, some guy, his dad. His dad and him, you know, he grew up on the Jerky Boys. His dad turned him on to it. So for the dad's birthday, you know, they send me a little script of what they want me to say to the dad, and then they'll pick Frank Rizzo or Sal, and then I just go crazy on it.
Who do they pick the most?
I have to say, it's pretty much a throw up. They like it. It could either be Sal or Frank or Jack. You know, I get a lot for Big Old Badass Bob the Cattle Rustler. And you know, any from Pico, I get Rosine, the Puerto Rican transvestite.
Rosine, I love Rosine.
You know what it is? What it is people out there by the millions, they have their favorites that they have a personal running joke, let's say, with their mom or their dad, and or their brother or their sister or their cousin, and that personal joke might only exist with the character Rosine, let's say.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. It's got to be real inside sometimes, right?
Yeah, that's how that kind of works.
My buddy and I have a friend who lives in Binghamton. His name's Larry. He and I can't go the entire week without texting each other quotes.
Of course not.
And, you know, yeah. We just love it. When you were a kid, you were like us. You started making prank phone calls when you were a kid, right? For just to entertain yourselves, you and your buddies.
Yeah. Well, this is where, you know, it's very funny. People, like, when I was a kid, I Rolling Stone did a feature story on me and Maxim magazine, and I said the same thing, and people couldn't believe it when they read it. I never had any interest whatsoever in doing prank phone calls at all when I was a kid, especially, and that's when it was really a big deal. Mm-hmm. I used to love to do, like, real situations where I would fuck with other human beings, especially adults.
Yeah.
And sometimes it got me a horrible ass whipping from my father. But I enjoy doing things. For example, my sister had a life-size doll. It was literally, like, you know, almost 5 feet tall. And I dressed it up in all my football equipment, and I took it up to the roof in Astoria, Queens.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, you know, 35 feet up, and the street is right below. And I would wait for a car to come up the block, speeding up the block. I would fire this thing off the roof out in front of the car. Next thing you hear, like,
oh, jeez, man.
Somebody gets blasted, and everybody come running up the block. They think somebody got blasted by a car. And that, to me, was that was like gold. I used to love to fuck with people in that
way. I'm sure the neighbors love that.
let me tell you, Astoria, Queens, it was all a bunch of tenement buildings. We were all like family up and down the block. So when you did stuff like that, you became like a legend. And I was only like, I don't know, 10 years old at the time. But anyway, what happens is those were the things that turned me on, like screwing with people.
Yeah.
The phone thing came later. I was recording my voices and my characters on Reel to Reel back in, you know, the early 70s and stuff like that.
Jeez.
But that was my characters interacting with each other and, you know, whatever. And then, you know, the late 70s, I said, oh, geez, how cool, because I was looking for a pickup truck or, you know, and I'm saying, holy crap, I got the bylines here, I got my boom box over here, and I just said, yeah, let me give this a shot. So I started interacting my characters with real people instead of just with each other, and that's how it all took off.
I was going to ask you, I mean, I know you grew up, and you were in the trades and, you know, some of the jobs that you did and everything. Were some of those calls people that you knew that you were going to fuck with that you knew it would be a good call, or was it totally random all the time?
No, it was all the stuff that you hear is always random. But now here's the beauty of it. Let's say, for example, you take a Brett Weir call.
See, right? That's exactly what I was going to ask you about. Yeah.
Now that call, my dad, there's Brett Weir is a real person. He exists.
Yeah.
And I think Brett today is probably close to 59.
Right. Well, I mean, he'd have Brett to exist Weir, if those guys were going to go looking for him. You know. Yeah.
But Brett Weir. This is a building in New York City, and the funny thing, here's the real funny kicker. My brother, my younger brother, Joe, actually now runs that same building.
Get out of here.
So anyway,
yeah,
he runs that building. It's on 79th Street, New York City. So anyway, and it's a beautiful high-rise building. So my father got Brett Weir that gig when he was a young man.
No shit.
Is it 6811 79th Street?
The beauty of that call, get Brett Weir, I said,
yeah,
is that Brett never answered the phone.
Yeah, I know.
See? Now,
if it worked
Brett,
out.
If Brett would have answered the phone, done. We would never have that comedy, that beautiful, with that doorman.
Right.
I have a doorman, and I have a funny feeling that the doorman, his name was Maury, he was a great guy. I have a funny feeling that he thought that I was Mr. Brennan, meaning my father.
Yeah,
My father was a bigwig in that industry, running all these high-rise Fifth Avenue, Park Avenue buildings.
And he was the super across the way.
Maybe, yeah. So when I'm saying, when I get really nasty with him, he knows what the fuck I'm talking. And don't have me come down here for you either, tough guy.
So, super across the way.
Yeah, I could hear in his voice that he was scared.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
And so that, but just like I said, imagine if Brett had answered that call. So to get back to your question,
yeah,
that's a call that was just so beautiful. Because when this started, Howard Stern started blowing this out of the water in, I think, the early to mid-80s.
Right.
People started coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, that's me.
Oh, really?
And then finally, Howard was like, this is, if anybody knows the real guy, please, I've got to know who this is. This is the funniest thing I ever heard in my life. I mean, to this day, Howard plays the stuff.
Right.
But anyway, so finally I came forward, and I did things inside the Jerky Boys. If you listen back to the old bootlegs, there's stuff that's in there, like the Brett Weir call, that all of these imitators that said it was them, they had no idea who this person is.
Yeah.
They had no idea who Brett Weir was.
Right.
But I have all the backstory, and that's how everybody at Atlantic Records said, holy shit, this is the real guy.
Right.
I found my original bootleg tape this afternoon before I came in to do the show, and you guys weren't called the Jerky Boys. It was just, I just wrote New York City Getting Fucked With, and I made up my own track listings and names, but we played it over and over. I had to it broke. My original one broke, so I mended it together and then put it on a new cassette. But I still have it from the...
You know, that is so cool. I saw the picture of it on Twitter.
Oh,
you
cool.
Know, it's what's so awesome about what you just said is... So anyway, there is no name, okay? This is now Atlantic Records picked me up. And Atlantic Records is going, okay, we're gonna officially release this. We need a name for this. And I'm on the phone with them, right?
Yeah.
And this is upstate New York in Salisbury Mills. So I'm on the phone with Atlantic Records. My mom is washing the dishes. And this has got to be, I think, 1992, 91, 93, somewhere in there. So my mom's washing the dishes. I came up with, you know, a few different names. And I was going to call it, I'm sure you guys all know, it was going around as the Auto Mechanic tapes.
Uh-huh.
It was going around as the Tough Guy tapes, the Jerky tapes. So... And so here we're thinking, my mom is listening to the conversation I'm having, and she's washing the dishes, and she goes, I don't know what the big deal is. I don't know why you just don't call it the fucking Jerky Boy. as soon as my mother said that, they heard it on the other end. They're like, oh, my God, that's it. I said, holy shit, that's brilliant. That's it. And she goes, well, I don't see what the big deal was anyway. You've been doing all the stupid little bastard characters forever. I don't think you would call it the Jerky Boys. And when she said the Jerky Boys, we all knew, bam, that's it. That's what this is going to be called.
Now, what were you doing when Stern started playing this stuff, and then you had to come out of the woodwork, and they found you? Just whatever?
I was actually hanging off buildings for a living, doing scaffolds and scaffolding.
Shit,
another call.
And it was pretty amazing. And that's when people. I was at a family reunion, and I believe it was like 84, 85, something like that. And my cousins are all coming up to me because I got hundreds of cousins, you know, up at this one. So anyway, they're all coming up to me. They're like, Johnny, you don't understand, man. Your tapes are everywhere. Your voice, your characters, they're everywhere. And I'm looking at them like, what the hell are you talking about?
That's crazy.
And they're like, the stuff that you make for your brothers, the tapes you make for your brothers. I'm like, yeah. It's all over. It's all over college up in Buffalo. It's all over up here in Boston. It's the tapes. And that's how I knew, holy shit, something really big is happening here.
Guy I work with at the radio station, his name is Mark Arum. He was frat brothers with your cousin Patrick Brennan. And he was playing the tape, and Patrick was, that's my cousin. At least that's according to him. I don't know if that's true or not, but it sounds
I'm
like
I'm sure there's
that's
a zillion stories.
That's right. That's exactly. How funny is that? My cousin TJ, he's a bigwig with the FBI or the Secret Service or something.
Oh, wow.
Well, maybe we shouldn't talk about this shit.
Yeah, so that Patrick Brennan. Yeah, so he's a great guy, a really great guy. And so, yeah, that would be exactly what we're talking about. And that would be exactly my cousins at the reunion saying, Johnny, I'm telling you, you know, because they know me and my brothers, we're like kind of in the Brennan family. We're like, you know, we're the crazy ones. If you ever go to the Brennan's house, like, and I'm the oldest of all the children, so growing up in my house was absolutely insane. People would love to come to my house just to spend a weekend, just to tell somebody that you got to go and you got to spend a weekend with Brennan. It's fucking crazy.
You could do a movie about that now.
I still remember that when that tape came out and then the albums came out, we made prank calls all the time. I had a character named Cliff Barnstein, and we would just mess with people in our town. I'd say, you know, you got a job. I need you to go down to the VFW, and if I'm not there, just start whacking away at the barbecue pit, and we're going to build a new one. And people would show up and not do it. And then, or we would get people towed and stuff. And then when the Jerky Boys came around, it was like, all right, I'm hanging up the phone. Because right. This is comedy, and it made us laugh. I still kept making prank phone calls. I can't stop. I will be sitting on my porch at 10 o'clock at night, and my wife's asleep, and I'll be having a cigarette, and I'm going to make a prank phone call. Just because it's in my blood. And I'm hoping that you're still doing that. Do you still say, ah, fuck it, I need to call somebody?
You know, it's funny. It's like I said, it was never anything that I wanted to do anyway. It's just that I knew it was a great way for me to get my characters interacting with other people. You see what I'm saying? And now, let me try to... Once it's rolling, let's put it this way. Once it's rolling, right?
Yeah.
Once it's rolling, there's no better feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And what I did, it's hilarious because you know what you're doing, you know, but I see the reason I believe that my stuff was always, and Howard Stern explained it, he says, the reason my stuff has been so successful over all these many decades, and it's as good or better now than it ever was, is because they're all real people. Whenever I was doing Saul Rosenberg, I was literally exaggerating my mom. Whenever I was doing Frank Rizzo, I was actually doing my father when he was pissed off. So every one of my characters is born of a real human being that I take and turn into a cartoon character.
Yeah.
So later when you would do the calls, or, you know, it was a blast, man. It was a blast because, you know, and people always say to me, well, I don't understand how you don't lose it and start laughing your ass off during these calls. And I always told people, I said, because for you, it's funny. For me, it's real. So in other words, when I say that one skit, that one of my favorite skits of all time is with that the chainsaw shot. So when I got to look for the chainsaw, and Saul Rosenberg trips over his dog, and he literally breaks his leg, he crawls back up into the chair, and everyone thinks it's the funniest thing, and it's how did you not laugh during that?
Right.
And I said, because for me, I had to crawl back up into the chair, and I'm looking down at my leg, and my fucking foot is dangling by a piece of skin. So for me, if I laugh, then it would just totally destroy, you know, what you're doing.
Right.
Then it wouldn't be funny. For me, it's a real little motion picture that I'm trying to paint so that you see exactly what I got going on, and I hope that you get a kick out of it.
And the adrenaline rush you're probably having when you're trying to keep these people on the phone as it's going on just probably keeps you going as well.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's just so funny how it turned into what it turned into.
Yeah.
And I believe because it really wasn't my intent. You see, I think it was just one of those miracle or happy accidents that happened because, you know, I'm making some stuff for my brothers to laugh on the weekend when we all get together up at the house upstate so we can all have a good laugh.
Sure.
And because for me, it's just, yeah, Johnny, you know, my father would always say, that's your fucking wacky brother fucking around again. So it was that lighthearted.
Yeah.
But guess what? When it got out to the world, it really meant something a lot more. You know, where I just thought I was doing a crazy goof from, like, I was doing a bunch of characters. I've been doing characters since I'm literally 5 years old. So I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, I'm doing this for my family, for my brothers, and we're going to have a kick out of it. But when it hit the streets, it was so much bigger than that. It was absolutely amazing.
I mean, you created, actually, a whole brand new American language. I know you know that, you know, because we were all, you know, from up north, and then, you know, we could have whole conversations just using jerky lines,
yes,
you know, over and over with all our friends. I'm sure you can do that, too, and you probably do with your family and your friends. But, you know, we're in Atlanta, and we come down here to Atlanta. I've been here, you know, a little over 20 years, and you'd run into people down here that has Southern accents that are talking like Frank Rizzo.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, my God, you know, we're teaching people to talk like us from up north through these tapes, you know?
Right.
It's pretty crazy.
Amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, funny enough, too, what I was telling you before about the Richard Petty Racing Schools, you know, when Jeff Gordon and all these guys were running all week in their shops, they all, I've sent so much stuff to the chief engineers and the chief guys over at, I've gone on tours down at Tony Stewart's when he was running for Home Depot. Every one of these guys down there, Tony Stewart is a diehard Jerky Boys fan. You know, it's not just one. It's all the teams. They run the tapes in their shops. To this day, you know, Frank Rizzo is still putting a smile on people's faces. And that goes for all of the characters. It's just pretty, it's pretty cool, man. It's pretty amazing.
And was it Radiohead name there?
Oh, yeah, Pablo Honey.
Pablo Honey, after your...
Yes.
Pablo?
Yes.
Please
yes.
come to Florida.
Right after my first record was out, actually, I think Radiohead, I have no doubt in my mind, they had the bootleg anyway. Sure. So they called me at my house, and again, it was, you're talking probably 93-ish, 92-ish, and Radiohead asked permission. They asked me if it would be okay if they used my skit, Pablo Honey, to name their debut album in America.
Wow.
And I just thought that was awesome. I had no idea who Radiohead was.
Right. Who are you again?
So I had no idea who these guys were. So I said, you know what, guys? I said, absolutely. You're welcome to it. So they named their debut album Pablo Honey after the Jerky Boys Pablo Honey skit. And guess who chases me up the Billboard charts? Jerky Boys hits number one.
Yeah.
It's the number one spot, and right behind me, number two, Radiohead with Pablo Honey.
I mean, how were you feeling when you saw that? Like, that week that was happening, and thinking back to
cool?
just you guys fucking around, you know, with the phone, it must have blown your mind.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like I told you. It's like a happy miracle. It's like something, just think, when could you ever say that I let Radiohead use my skit to name their debut album in America. They would go on to become one of the greatest rock and roll bands, the greatest bands of all time.
Right.
And then they chase you up the charts. I have the plaque hanging on my wall. The plaque was sent to me from Billboard magazine. And right there, Jerky Boys number one and number two, Radiohead with Pablo Honey. So, I mean, that's like a dream. It's just like a dream. It's amazing.
You know, Paul McCartney is going to call you and say, we're going to name our next album Hot Mops. Yeah.
Jeff, you had another question.
I wanted to ask what was going on with the Jerky Boys animated series. You had mentioned that maybe there was some progress being made towards that.
Yes.
Cartoon.
Yes, absolutely. That's the kind of thing, you know, it's funny how Hollywood works, man. It's like, here you have a product, a proven product, right? You look at my characters in Family Guy, they're huge successes. Everybody loves it. I've been asked thousands of times, why does Mort Goldman not have his own show?
Right.
It would be funnier than
my characters work. Wherever they go, they work, right? You don't have to fucking test them. You don't have to throw spaghetti at the wall.
Nah.
So you have Hollywood, right? You go into pitch meetings, and here I have this whole stable of characters. And you could do a blue cartoon if you want, where it's a little bit more risque. You could do a clean one if you want, because I've done that as well. You could pretty much do whatever you want. But you have this whole stable of characters that have never been brought to an animated world, okay? And here they sit, and you'll see these dumbasses in meetings look at you like, I don't know them.
Well, of course.
What the fuck don't you know?
Yeah, they have to justify their job, so they got to ask questions, right?
Just so in my mind, and in millions of other people, fans' minds, it's a no-brainer. This should have been an animated series eons ago.
Oh, yeah.
And again, you can look at the track record of my characters, you know, let's put it that way, on Family Guy or anything else they've been in. They work very well.
Do you think you could do the Jerky Boys, if it never had existed in 2017 with caller ID and PC people and all that, do you think you could do it again? Do you think it could, like, somebody could come along and recapture that?
You know what? I think today it would be extremely difficult. Because, again, it gets back to one of those happy miracles. Everything is a time and a place. Everything falls into something for a reason.
Right.
And don't forget, I was also before the internet.
Yeah.
And, you know, way before. I mean, you're talking about when it was still doing reel-to-reel cutting and whatnot. So just think about how things are. So today, everything is instant gratification.
Yep, right.
And you watch if you've got your phone in your hand. And we're all guilty of it, myself included. if I'm going through the phone and I see something that's it's got an ad, I'm gone. I'm out of there. Yeah. If I'm going through the phone and I see something that's going to waste my time, like, I want to see something. I want to see it quick, and I want to see what's going on. I want to get right to the point. See, I've always been that way, though. I've always been a very high-strung guy. I just want, you know, go, go, go. But I don't think, you know what? Anything is possible, but I think lightning has already hit with that, the Jerky Boys thing, because I know they've been trying to do it for the last, you know, 35-plus years. They've been trying to recreate the same thing, and I know the record companies have been trying as hard as they can, and it never happened. It never came about. All they wound up with was boxes and boxes and boxes of CDs and tapes of people that were actually just doing Frank Rizzo, Saul Rosenberg.
Right, you got to have the original, baby.
So speaking of
anyway, that's a very interesting question, but I don't know. And again, remember, the Jerky Boys, the thing I created went viral before there was an internet.
Yeah.
So how did it go viral? People said, "Oh my God!" They would take the thing home. They would make 5, 10, 15 copies, and they say, "You gotta fucking hear this. You're not gonna hear what you hear." And that's how I went viral all those years ago.
That is amazing how that happened. Yeah.
Today, you could probably go viral, but it would be through social media.
And then it would be done. And then, you remember that video from two years ago? Do you listen to any of the modern guys who came after you? Like, I don't know, Touchtone Terrorist, Tom Mabe, any of those guys?
You know what? When people tell me, I think it's, I'm not going to say for sure if it's Mabe or somebody did something about telemarketers, and I remember them going around to different radio stations, and they were actually very nice. They were giving me props about Jerky Boys 3. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember who the guy was, but he was saying that, yes, he said, "I just want to give a big shout out to Johnny, and Jerky Boys 3 actually gave me this idea that when, you know, because on Jerky Boys 3 is when I put the reverse where calls come in." And
yeah,
I was going to say, I love that.
You guys probably remember Jerky Boys 3. Jerky Boys 3 is also my favorite Jerky Boys record.
Really?
Oh, it's one of mine.
Yes, I love that record.
Yeah.
Because I loved the one that had the people.
I put so much work into that record because Jerky Boys 1 took the world by storm. After I made Jerky Boys 1, people would say, okay, there's no way on God's earth that you can follow that record up.
Right.
Not only did I follow it up, I smashed it with Jerky Boys 2. That sold almost 1 million units in a week, and it hit number one in Billboard.
I bought it the day
then
it came out.
I said, okay. Well, now I said, oh, geez, now I'm in a pickle. So I got a track right here. I got to keep this thing going. So for Jerky Boys 3, I worked on it for like a year and a half. Came up with an amazing concept for the album cover along with Sean Taggart and just the whole King Kong thing and also put 5 brand new characters on the CD and just so much work went into Jerky Boys 3 and it's so original and the calls coming in and this now gets back to what we were talking about. What do you think happens? As soon as I release Jerky Boys 3, the internet.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
And you could clearly see where I was selling millions and millions of records for 1 and 2. Jerky Boys 3 hits the board. I think I sold 600,000-700,000 units. And then everybody was like, well, you know, I'm sure it's well over that now. But everybody was like, well, that's the end of that. There's no use to have to buy anything anymore because now we can just take it off the internet.
Right.
Right. And then, but then there were two more albums after that, right? Two original.
Yes. Yes.
Stop
yes.
Staring at Me.
Yep, I did Jerky Boys 4, and I did Stop Staring at Me, Jerky Boys 5, and then I did, I think around 99, I put out the Jerky Tapes.
Yes.
It's a brown bag kind of thing, like Led Zeppelin, In Through the Outdoor.
Right.
So it's a brown bag, the Jerky Tapes, and the Jerky Tapes is made up of calls that were not rejects, but I didn't use them because they ran very, very long. And people would always ask me, Johnny, do you have anything in the can? Because by this time, I stopped making calls. So, and I would say, Jesus, no, I have nothing in the can. Everything that I ever did was used on my records. So then I said, wait a minute, I do have a few calls, maybe, you know, 15, maybe 20 of these things that are literally like 6, 8, 10 minutes long. And I said, but you know what? Some of them are damn good. So I took a chance. I said, the hell with it, I'm going to try it. I put out the Jerky Tapes. It's got Derek Jeter call on there. It's got the Flower Lady.
People love the flower.
They listen. And by the way, you can listen to this what I'm talking about. It's called the Jerky Tapes. You can listen to it. I just started my own YouTube channel. It's the official Johnny Brennan Jerky Boys YouTube channel. And you can check out the Jerky Tapes on there. And
cool.
You can listen to the calls in their entirety. And I think you're gonna love them. They're long, but they're absolutely classic.
And that's the easiest way to do it nowadays. Everybody's just watching, you know, anytime you even want to pull up a song, you're just pulling it up on YouTube now.
Yeah, and if you're listening out there, go to thejerkyboys.com and you can follow Johnny at JerkyBoysJohnny on Twitter. Jeff?
Yeah, I was just looking for the YouTube channel.
Yes.
I was trying to find a link for it.
Hello.
How often does it happen? I mean, you know, you own a home now and everything, and you're making calls, you know, to service people that, that you normally would need. You know, if you're calling a painter, I mean, how often does it happen where you just start laughing to yourself going, holy shit, you know?
Yeah. Or it's like just like sometimes you'll hear, like I'll think to say to myself, you know, like if I'm speaking to somebody on the phone, and I've done it sometimes too, you know, I catch myself doing it just like other people do. Like, for example, somebody, like they'll say to me, no, did you call here before? And right off the bat, I'm thinking, no, I didn't call before. Do you recognize the voice?
You recognize, exactly.
You remember the insulator job?
Yeah. I know, you can't not do it. It's ingrained in my brain now, you know?
Right.
And if I hear a line, and the next line I know what it is, I gotta say it. I can't get around it.
And you know the funny thing? The funny thing is the Jerky Boys and all the characters, they all have dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of little nuances and catchphrases that you would repeat, and, you know,
sure.
anything you could just think of, like anything you could think of from Jack or somebody might ask you a question in real life and you'll respond because that question that they asked you triggered a response.
Absolutely.
I need to dance, you fucker. I've used that one.
Yeah, I love that. Nelson, I love when he hung up the phone.
Oh.
Nelson.
Oh.
Whenever
I need to dance, you fucker. Don't you say it.
Whenever someone's cooking bacon, then I always go, do you smell bacon?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the best calls. And it's so, it's short, but it's the best because you're ignoring this lady. Right. And then, do you smell bacon? I smell bacon. No. Click.
Do you remember that other one the guy called? He goes, I'm calling about a little bit of information.
Yeah.
Go,
yeah.
You want some information? And he's like, yeah. Go fuck yourself,
asshole.
And then I hung up the phone on the guy. See, now those are classic little bits, too, like the one I did for the Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah. I got a truckload of fake pussies.
Big old badass pup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I damn sure can't fuck them all.
I got a truckload of fake pussies out here. Now, some of them are getting, I get this, I sure as hell can't fuck them all.
I like the one where, I think it's Frankie's in the hospital, and I can't get my hands on a bottle of hooch. Johnny, disconnect the call.
You know, it's so funny that you bring that one up. That one has very sentimental reasons to me, and is one of my all-time favorite Frank Rizzo calls. And and I always tried to ask myself, why do I like that one so much? And if you listen, I finally answered the question. If you listen very closely to that call, you actually feel sympathetic. You feel bad for Frank Rizzo for the first time. It's the actual first time he's vulnerable. And up until that point, I couldn't figure out why I liked that so much. He's trying to tell the kid, oh, he wants a bottle of hooch. You can't get near a bottle of hooch. He's up in the fucking... And one of my favorite lines of all time, I don't know how it just shot out of my head so fast, is when he says to me, can I give him the company name of the truck? And I said to the kid, how the fuck am I going to give you the company name when I'm busy rolling around in this fucking truck? And I said, I can give you some serial numbers off the gearbox. That's about it.
Right.
And it's the first time, though, that you actually hear Frank, even in his voice. It's just very low demeanor. It's just like you could tell Frank's just that. He's just fucking had it.
He's low keys in the hospital. He's in pain.
Yeah. Yep.
Man. Did you ever have any trouble getting these people that you talk to sign a release to be?
Yes. Yes, there was one. There was a couple, actually.
I mean, it's amazing that you got all those people to sign. Anyway,
right?
I'll tell you something. My manager, who I speak about often in the skits, Harry Getzoff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Harry is mentioned a lot in these skits, and he's a terrific human being. And to this day, we're very, very dear friends. So Harry had a 99.9% rate of getting clearances because of his personality. He was such a nice guy. And he got all the clearances all through the years. Now, obviously, on Jerky Boys 1, there was a couple, you know, we didn't even, it was the first record. There was no way to get clearance. It was a bootleg.
Right.
So I got sued by the piano tuner guy.
Oh.
And I think it was like $200. We threw him $200. He was happy. And again, we don't even know if that was really him. It was just easier to pay him the $200, you know, whatever.
Sure.
So anyway, so that was about the extent of it. You know, as far as that goes, you know, I lost my train of thought. What were we going at?
I was just saying to have a hard time getting people to sign.
Yeah, the clearances. That's right. So that was a good example. And then as they would come on, yes, obviously then I was very careful to try to get as many as we could, or, you know, almost 100%. But Trouble was the Civil War memorabilia.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The best one of the best ones.
Trouble. That was a hard one.
Really?
It took many months and about $5,000. And the guy was a wonderful person, just a great guy. He's a doctor in the Hudson Valley, but he was just a great guy, and he was an avid collector for Civil War stuff. So anyway, that cost, you know. But what happened, lo and behold, was his grandchildren actually said to him, "This will be the coolest thing. You have to do this."
Right.
So he eventually gave in, and I could use that call. And to this day, it's one of the greatest classic calls, Civil War memorabilia. And there was another flower lady call that I put on the jerky tapes that cost another $4,000 or $5,000. But geez. I had because it was just incredible. Also, but clearances for those. That's about it as far as clearances go.
What about the mom of the Or was it the what is it?
You do?
I don't know about that.
Well, I don't get it.
Oh, you're
from Jerky Boys 2, the nude.
You're talking about the nude beaches one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there was no problems there. There was that. And by the way, that gets back to what we were saying before. That was a bit of an inside job. These are record executives that knew friends of friends, and this one guy was part of a nudist beach, and so I had no clue who this guy was, Jim something or other. And by the way, I call him on the skit, it's Jim with a B, Jim.
Yeah, Jim. Is Jim around?
Anyway, I don't know these people, but they are friends of friends of friends through the record company. So there were a couple of inside jobs like that, and obviously the poor woman had no clue. I kind of felt bad. She, I'll talk to him. Like, don't you wait and see. Don't you worry.
I'll talk to him when he gets home.
Yeah. So, well, again, now keep in mind that particular call, it's Nudist Colony. I believe it's called Nudist Camp or Nudist Colony.
Yeah, Saul's Nude Beach.
Saul's Nude Beach, man. There you go. I'm like a half a deck. But anyway, so there you go. Think about Saul's Nude Beach is to this day some people's absolute. You can't tell them any otherwise. It's their favorite call. They don't want to hear anything else. So anyway, to get back to the other thing we were talking about, there is one call we couldn't get, and here's Harry, as beautiful a person as Harry was, and as nice as everybody loved him. I did a call, and I don't know how it got out there. Right? I'll say that, but, you know, I don't think I know how it got out there.
Right.
There's a call called Mr. Pickle. There's a big company in New York City called Mr. Pickle.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
And it's their giant supply of pickle warehouse company. I don't know why the guy didn't want to do anything. I could have made it, you know, I could have done all kinds of great advertising for him. But anyway, so after the call was done, and it's a great call, by the way, you could find out, you can Google it. People let it slip. They somehow get out to the public. So anyway, Harry calls up Mr. Pickle, gets the owner of the company on the phone, and says, hey, he plays him the call and says, can I come down and you know, just bring you release forms for clearance for this call? He says to him, Harry, he goes, you come anywhere near my fucking business and I'll break your fucking leg.
Wow. Oh, man.
Holy shit. And that's the best you could get from him, huh?
That's what he said to Harry. So Harry tried a couple of times, and the response was always the same. He told me he was going to break his fucking legs. But the call is out there. People, it's actually very funny. I call the company up, and the guy answers the phone, and I'm Frank Rizzo-ish. So he answers the phone, and I'm like, he's like, hello, Mr. Pickle. And I said, oh, whoa, what the fuck with that filthy mouth? and then he goes, what are you talking about, filthy mouth? What is the matter with you? What's your problem? I said, well, you're coming off with that mouth. Oh, Mr. Pickle, hey, Mr. Pickle, what the hell is that filthy mouth you're running there? He goes, is there something wrong with you, buddy? Did you look it up in the phone book? What's the name of my company? And I said, Mr. Pickle. He goes, well, there you go. That's the name of my company. It's Mr. Pickle. Now, and I said, oh, okay, all right, maybe we get off on the wrong foot. I said, what do you got now, Dick? You got, I said, you got condiments, you got some things, let's talk here. I've got a big party coming up. So he starts running through his things, and then he comes up again. And I think he says pickles again. I go, holy gee, there you go. it's a classic Jerky Boys bit, but like I said, it's been leaked. Years ago, from what I understand, it leaked out there somehow. So I'm sure you can find it on the internet. It's Mr. Pickle.
I mean, Johnny, that sounds like it could be so. I mean, you're brilliant, but that sounds like something that just could be so easy.
Yeah.
You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, for him.
Oh, wait, yeah, yeah, right. You know?
I used to get lost when we'd make prank phone calls and I wouldn't know what to say next.
Right.
But when we would do that, when you'd get into character, when you become somebody else, it's much easier. It was much easier for me to, you know, mess with them and go down to go and take the script wherever. But if yeah. I was just doing my own voice, I would get lost.
Yeah, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough.
No, we're not good. We're not.
Well, that gets back to what we were saying before. The reason, like this is what Howard Stern said. The reason it's going to go on forever. You'll listen to these things in 50 years, and they're going to be just as good as they are now. Is because it's exactly what you just said. It's like these are real characters. They're real people. So I never have a worry about where I'm going to go because I grew up with my mom, my dad, my Uncle Vinny. I grew up with all these people who I modeled all these characters after. So I know exactly where I'm going. And I'd always like to do it best in a dark room. Even when I recorded for Subway Sandwiches, Budweiser, whoever, Lee Jeans, I record for all these companies, and
wow.
I always keep the control room, everything dark, so I could just close my eyes and just kind of relax and just have a blast. You just go, you get into that character, and you just go for it. It's just the way it's just that's how it works the best, you know.
I mean, how does that commercial work start happening when you started getting those calls to do those jobs? Would they call you and yeah, just say, yeah, all right, this is what we need you to do, you know, or yeah. they yeah, just let you do
yeah,
your thing?
Yeah. Because, you know, the Jerky Boys has a very wide audience. My demographic is huge. So Anheuser-Busch naturally knew that they, you know, could hit, you know, sell a lot of, and the whole campaign was built on my Brett Weir call. The famous line, get Brett Weir, I said.
Yeah.
So they made up thousands of t-shirts and the slogans were all over you could see the slogans everywhere. And it was Bud Light, I said. So that was the slogan. So everywhere we went, it was Bud Light, I said. So I did TV, I did television, I did radio. As a matter of fact, the radio commercial won the best commercial of the year, and I got the Mercury Award. For it was a Frank Rizzo bookstore for Bud Light beer. So I mean, it's pretty cool stuff.
Wow, that's amazing, man! Hey, congratulations with all your success, man. You know,
thank you, guys. I look forward like this, man. I'm looking forward to with all this new social media and stuff. I just started doing these Comic Cons now, where you get out and meet the fans.
Oh yeah.
So I think I'm looking forward to, you know, more years of just, you know, just,
maybe like, put the podcast
an animated series. An animated series would be insane.
Yeah, or maybe put the podcast back together. We really enjoyed the podcast.
Yeah, I really loved doing the podcast. Except, you know, it was so much work, and
we know it's a lot of fucking
work.
Know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of work, and I'd spend my whole Sunday getting it ready for Monday, and there was really nothing in it. You know, there was no return. There was no. You know, you got to look, I got kids, just like anybody else, everybody goes out to work, they work for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you're basically doing work for free.
I need work like anybody.
Right. Now, with Patron, though, right. or Patreon.
Patreon, you'd get a lot of people giving you money.
You could make a Patreon and put out episodes just for people who would pay for it.
Now, we have a lot of...
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, isn't it? I heard about that Patreon.
Yeah. Hey, we'll work it out for you.
Yeah, we'll do it for you.
Just call us on the side. We'll tell you how this all works.
We'll get Mikey Rudiman to take care of it for you.
Right.
That's Mikey Rudiman.
Yeah. You know, that when they stop jagging him in the ass with baseball bats. See?
Yeah.
I know.
I can't have this. I can't have this, Shelly.
It's seamless.
Oh, man. This is, we've done a couple interviews here or there. But this is definitely my favorite so far.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, Johnny, I just got to, you know, tell you that you're a fucking hero to me and probably these guys, but definitely a comedy hero. Not too many people could have product that came out in the early 90s that I can still listen to today and it's fresh and it makes me laugh. And I love it because it keeps me connected to home and to people that I've known through my life. Our love of Jerky Boys keeps us connected. So I really wanted to take at least 1 second and, you know, say thank you, because I really mean it from the bottom of my heart, man. You've given me so many laughs, and it is very much an honor to be able to speak to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you to say. I appreciate that. And I thank you guys. I really appreciate you just having me on and having
Oh, man.
And it's always a great time. people, you know what the people love now more than anything? What's they that? Love backstory. Now, obviously, yeah. People still want, you know, they still want to hear, come on, you fuck, you got to make some more calls and stuff.
Yeah.
But people do love the backstory. Like, and right. when you can get a chance to talk about some of that shit, it's pretty funny stuff.
Well, and for me, I mean, you were, you know, I was in high school when the tapes were first circulating, and I guess I never really thought about who this guy really was for years. You were almost like a myth. And then finally when, you know, Stern was playing you and you started coming around, I'm like, oh, this is like the guy, yeah. you know? So to be able to talk to you now is pretty amazing for us, man.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for having me on. And I like I said, down the road, you want to, you know, holidays are coming. You want to have another, you know, shoot the shit session. We just bullshit, man. I'd love to come back on and say hello to everybody.
And hopefully come down to the track sometime and you can come in the studio. You know?
Yeah, we'll go zooming all over. But, you know... There are cons down here in Atlanta all the time. There's, you know, the main one is Dragon Con every year on Labor Day weekend, but there's a bunch of other ones. If you're down here, we're going to come see you, and we're going to have you sign a shit tough guy.
Yeah.
Thanks. I appreciate that, man. And, like I said, more. I always, if you just let me too, I appreciate you letting me give a big shout out to the fans. You know, I just want to say a big thank you to all the fans over the years. And without the fans, it's nothing. And I did find over all these years, though, that my fans are the coolest, most diehard fans that I have ever seen, ever.
Oh, you bet.
There was a woman before I got famous, right? This is going back to this has to be the mid-80s. And there was this young woman in Boston. She was dying from brain cancer, and she had, you know, there was no helping her. And
yeah.
I received a letter because at the time I only had a little post office box, and I was doing these bumper stickers that where you could call a phone line and it said 1-800 Hey You Jerky, so you could call the phone line. You remember those things?
Yeah,
$3. I was making like $3 or $2 a phone call, whatever it was. But that's all I had was a phone line, and this is way back in the '80s. And this woman reached out to me with a letter to my PO box or fan box, whatever you want to call it, fan mail, and told me her story and included her number. And I'll never forget calling her. And I called her from my Uncle Vinny's place. This is way before I was famous. And I was still working on the scaffold and whatnot. And I called her because I didn't realize how cool it was that here's a woman in Boston writing me a letter telling me how much I make her feel good and take away some pain. And so I called her up. We spent a long time on the phone. And funny enough, I called her from my Uncle Vinny's apartment down in the village. Kissel, that's the character.
Kissel, yeah.
So anyway, I have a long talk with her, and I speak with her a few times, and it was just wonderful conversation. It made her feel good, and she was such a sweet person. So anyway, about 3 or 4 years ago, some guy reaches out to me. I don't remember if it was on Facebook or wherever it was, and he's you know, 25, 30 years old, whatever he is, and he says, Johnny, do you remember that woman that you would call on occasion, you know, with that was dying of the brain tumor in Boston? I said, yes, absolutely. He goes, that was my mom.
Oh, no way.
And he said, dude, he says, I am your biggest fan for life. And I just, you know, there's nothing that can make you feel that good. You know how good that makes you feel as a person, that you're able to make people just have a chuckle or a laugh, especially in today's times. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I can't imagine. I'd like to be able to do that.
When you're a human being, so you have shit that drives you crazy or bothers you or brings you down. I have that all the time. And then you get something like that and you're like, well, you know, my life isn't so bad, and I'm happy that I can make somebody else laugh. Making somebody else laugh and them acknowledging it is one of the greatest gifts.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing.
And also, you know, you brought up your kids for a second there, and you know, when people ask, or you know, the kids are going around and they say, oh, you know, what does your dad do? And he's the Jerky Boys guy. Does it get like that? What do your kids say about it?
Well, it's actually very cool. My oldest is now 22, and all through her high school and stuff like that. It's funny because a lot of the kids that she grew up with over the years, because she's 22 now, they all love Family Guy, and they know the old Victoria's dad. You know, he's Family Guy.
No way.
And then when she got into high school, all of the guards and all of the teachers at the high school like the Jerky, that Family Guy shit. You know, we love the Jerky Boys.
Right, they're like us.
Yeah, they're telling my daughter, you got to get some Jerky Boy shit, Victoria, from your dad. And she said, that's the funny, like, the juxtaposition. Here, on one hand, it's all the kids, they love the Family Guy. And now, but the funny thing is now, you got to see these kids, they come up to me at these Comic-Cons.
Yeah.
And they're 11-year, 12-year-old girls, and they come up to my table. I'm thinking they're going to glom up some Family Guy stuff, and it's no way, man. We're here for the Jerky Boys.
Yeah.
Really cool. Very cool stuff.
And they come up going, auto mechanic, looking for a job.
Everybody, yeah. Follow Johnny at Jerky Boys Johnny on Twitter, and Facebook is what, Jeff?
Facebook slash Jerky Boys Johnny.
And check out thejerkyboys.com. That's thejerkyboys.com. And there's a link to a bunch of merch. You can find it there. It's got like lots of dashes and stuff, but there's a whole bunch of new hats and t-shirts, cool shit on there. And then, of course, check out the Jerky Gourmet Foods. I know I'm going to order the Frank Pickles Barrel Ass for my dad.
He'll like it.
He likes pickles. He pickles they.
And what's Saul's thing? Saul's is...
I pickle they. Saul's is the eyeglasses.
You have Saul?
Yeah. You're talking about the hot dip.
Yeah.
Salsa. There's two salsas.
Oh, the salsa.
Pico has his own. It's called Pico's Mild-Mannered Salsa. That's a very calm, nice one. And the one, I will say this, the Saul Rosenberg salsa, it's called Saul's Tearing the Ass Out of Me.
that's the one I got to get.
Trust me, it has a kick. I love hot food, but it does have a kick.
Laser treatment.
Johnny, would I be able to sue you, maybe, after I had some of that? Sue everybody.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they corrected me. I thought Saul Rosenberg, I thought it was a Saul skit where I said, and I think they said, no, I think you did Jack Torse, when I said that the doctor shot a pumpkin ball up my ass.
Yes. Could you please?
Do you remember? Was that Saul or was that Jack?
It was Jack.
That's what somebody said. I was doing Saul Rosenberg, and they say, Johnny, no, that's not Saul, it's Jack. Doctor shot a pumpkin ball up his ass.
Shot a pumpkin ball straight up my ass. I was under the impression that he would beat me about the breasts. Another great
breasts and head.
Yes.
Oh man,
Johnny, thank you so much, man. You're welcome. Anytime you have anything that you want to promote, email Jeff, and we'll talk about it. And we'd love to have you on around the holidays. Maybe get some holiday greetings sent out to people.
Oh yeah,
absolutely, absolutely, guys.
All right, Mike.
All right. Back it up. Thank you very much, Johnny.
Thank you, sir.
Bring it back, Mike. Watch his fucking legs.
What are we doing here?
Hey, so I just want to say thank you guys once again, and a big shout out to the fans.
Thanks, man.
The Jerky Boys fans are the best, man. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Love you, buddy.
Say a prayer, baby.
Bye.
Say a prayer, baby.
Bye, Johnny.
See you guys later.
All right. Thanks so much.
Oh, that was awesome. What a great guy. What a great fucking guy.
Did you just hang up on him now?
Yeah, we said goodbye to him.
Yeah, I know.
It'd be funny if he was still listening.
Those fucking assholes.
Holy shit. I'm going to be smiling for days about this shit.
And there you have it from September 2017. That's Johnny Brennan, a.k.a. the Jerky Boys, who shared about an hour with us. Hope you enjoyed it, and I hope that you guys have a great Christmas. Please stick around for our producers and our sponsors. Don't miss our episode next week where we cover everybody who died, everybody that we lost from the entertainment and pop culture world in 2020. And it's a mighty long list. It'll be me, Jeff Leboff. Ira Malkin stops by, and he also has a game. How about that? Christmas casting call. It was a lot of fun. And Dustin Lawler. So don't miss it. That comes out next week. Hey, Radio Labyrinth is brought to you by Atlanta Pizza and Gyro, who are open. And you can go to their website and find out all that information. You can go in there, sit down, have yourself a nice, delicious meal, bring the family. They have a great staff and a great owner. Atlanta Pizza in Gyro. Their website is atlantapizzagyro.com. You can order online and when you order online, you can do pickup or delivery, and you don't have to pay till you get there. So don't worry about that. You don't have to pay ahead of time. Atlanta Pizza in Gyro wants to thank everyone who has been supportive to them and to other restaurants through these tough times for the entire industry. And listen, if you have been to Atlanta Pizza in Gyro, I implore you, please leave a review on Google. And we can't forget our friend Brett Perkins, who I did reach out to. But I haven't heard back from him.
Get Brett Perkins, I said, the super across the way.
And his business, LDI Repro Printing of Athens. They have all of your construction printing needs, commercial or residential, in Athens since 2005 with a fast turnaround and affordable prices. Call 706-316-9366 or email them at athens@ldiline.com. Thank you, Jeff. Now's the time we thank all of our Radio Labyrinth producers. Producer is a Radio Labyrinth Patreon member who donates $25 a month or more to our podcast. So, without further ado, thank you, Chad Shepherd, who is also a sponsor, who comes in at the $50 mark, and we appreciate it very, very much. Chad has been a member since October 6th, 2017, and we love you for it. Also, thank you to Brian Smith, Eric Malmstrom. Eric has been with us for almost 4 years. John Sutherland, member since 2018. Keith Tate, since October 14th, 2016. Matt Carter, since November 12th, 2016. Mike D, since August 1st, 2018. Tim Slayton, Sean Hall, since April 22nd, 2018. Todd Ellis, a member since January 19th, 2020. He's the youngest one. And last but not least, Emily Warren, who joined up on May 19th, 2018. Thank you to each and every one of you so very much. And now we give a shout out to the rest of the donors. Aaron Roberts, Alan Barker, Amber Gilpatrick, Andrew Harbin, Andrew Malazzi, Brian Jackson, Brian Nix, Buck Monterey, Chris Cosentino, Dave Benson, Denise Reynolds, Gwyn Ketchum, Herb Lamb, Jeff Peterson, Jeremy Turman, Jesse Rosinski, Mark Weiland, Randy Reeves, Robert Kearns, Kevin Stokes, Wayne Blair, Ashley Rose, Chris Knight, JW, Kevin Schwartz, Lou Caniglio, Mary Fouquet, Ryan Wilson, Sam Wells, Walt Murray, Bradley A. Schumpert, Brandon C. Pilcher, Dustin Lawler, Jason Heft, Nick Starks, Trent, Wendy Muller, Andrew Hopkins, David C. Funk, Lauren Calderman, Robert Haley, Robert Calderman, Sherry Dougherty, and Tim Slayton. Thank you all very much. We very much appreciate it, and thank you for sticking with us for so very long and all year in this crazy 2020 in which we live. Radio Labyrinth is recorded in front of a live studio audience. Well, the four of us, occasionally three, sometimes four, sometimes three, and is produced by you. For a complete list of Radio Labyrinth's awesome Patreon sponsors, just look at the show notes. Our intro theme was produced and performed by John Mark Lindell. Keep it canon.